From KCRW in Santa Monica and KCRW.com, I'm Matt Holzman, sitting in for Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
You listen, if you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
Everybody thinks your business is really, really all right life. Peaches and cream.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood, Hollywood.
This week on The Business, you might have read about comedian Marc Maron in the New York Times. His interviews with fellow comedians are raw and funny, but they also give an unusually candid look at life behind the scenes in Hollywood. Today we'll hear part of Maron's conversation with comic, writer, producer Louis C.K. But first, it's the Hollywood News Banter. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
I'm joined by our regular banterer, John Horn of Los Angeles Times. Hello, John.
Hello, Matt.
The big consumer electronics show in Las Vegas has just concluded, the huge, literally huge show of what's coming out new for consumers. What's the big news out of CES?
You're going to have to spend a lot more to upgrade your TV, your video player, your computer, your internet connection. You know, the usual.
Yeah, but it's always the story out of CES. You're going to have to spend more
spend
money.
Spend more. Yeah. Buy our stuff.
One of the interesting things is how you're going to have to spend more. I think they're thinking that 3D television is going to be very big. But it seems like the big story has been internet-enabled televisions.
Now, at the same time, and I think this is where the real future at the Consumer Electronics Show is and what's going to happen, is that there was a study that was released at the end of the year about DVD sales and Blu-ray sales. And the real, I think, significant statistic was that sales of movies via the internet was up 17% to $683 million, while internet and cable video on demand went up 21% to $1.8 billion. That, to me, is where the future of the business is going, and the consumer electronics groups are trying to figure out how they're going to monetize that and how are you going to watch this stuff on your internet-connected television.
But for the consumer, the nice thing is that you don't have to buy a whole new television to do that. If you have a nice digital television now, you can buy an external box that will do that for you. So it's going to be easier for people to adopt without having to spend a huge amount of money.
Absolutely. And there's been a lot of talk, too, about cord cutting, about how you're going to disconnect your cable operator or your dish. I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, I watch ESPN. I watch Prime Ticket. I watch sports. I don't want to watch Jon Stewart reruns exclusively on Hulu or whatever service it's on. I want to watch live television. And a lot of the services right now are about library and archive television show. They're not so much about live programming.
It does seem, though, that this convergence that we've been talking about for the last 15 years is upon us, where the computer and the internet and the television, all those things are being combined into one box that will be in your living room.
I completely agree. And a year from now, whatever the equivalent of True Grit would be, we'll be watching that in theaters and at our home at the same time.
Well, speaking of True Grit and talking about what's going to be on your TV rather than how you're going to watch it, 2010 is wrapped up. The award season is officially in swing. The Writers Guild have announced their nominees. The Producers Guild have announced their nominees. Oscar ballots are pending. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, I think what's the most amazing thing about the Oscars is that the audience is responding to the movies that are getting the most awards momentum. A year ago, obviously Avatar was the biggest hit in the history of Hollywood, but also The Hurt Locker, which won the Best Picture prize, grossed $17 million. And regardless of which movie wins, I think the front runners, Social Network, True Grit, I guess you would have to put King's Speech in there too. All of these movies are incredibly successful on a commercial level. So the audience is responding to these films, which I think is a very encouraging sign because, God willing, it will make the studios maybe take a gamble on making some more smart movies.
So is it because they're smart movies that they're getting such a response, or is it something about the way they're being marketed?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, I think the companies that are releasing these films, you could take a look at what Fox Searchlight is doing with Black Swan or the Weinstein Company is doing with The King's Speech. They have released these films in a very delicate, patient way where they introduce a city at a time. They let the word of mouth build. The critics get behind the films. And before you know it, the movies are a little bit like a runaway train. They just have a momentum that can't be stopped. And there's some people who think The King's Speech could get to $100 million and that Black Swan could get to $75 million before all is said and done. That's an unbelievable outcome for a highbrow and with Black Swan, almost genre-defined film.
And not only highbrow and genre, but that costs somewhere between $10 and $20 million.
I think that's another incredible point. I mean, these are movies that didn't cost a lot of money. King's Speech cost $15 million. Black Swan cost $13 million. And then you have films like Little Fockers, which cost $125 million. Tron Legacy, which probably cost close to $175 million. In terms of return on investment, Black Swan and King's Speech are going to kill these movies.
And that has got to be good news for the Academy.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the Academy expanded the Best Picture race last year from 5 films to 10 films, in large part to try to draw in more commercial films, and they ended up giving their Best Picture prize to The Hurt Locker. So this year, that strategy appears to be paying off. I mean, I think Inception is probably going to be in the Best Picture race. True Grit, Social Network, King's Speech, Black Swan, these are all hit movies, and they're all good movies. So I think in some ways, what the Academy wanted to have happen is playing out exactly as they imagined.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, Matt.
That's John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Marc Maron has the hard-edged wit of a guy who's been around the comedy track a few times, but has never quite taken the checkered flag. He started doing stand-up in the late 80s and made a name for himself. He did a record 44 appearances on the Conan O'Brien Show. He was a host on the now-defunct Lefty Air America radio network. But in 2009, he may have found his calling as a journalist when he started chatting with his comedian friends for a podcast he called WTF.
Are we doing this? Really?
Wait for it.
Are we doing this?
Wait for it.
How?
What the f***?
WTF.
And it's also, what the f***?
What's wrong with me?
It's time for WTF.
What the f***?
With Marc Maron.
WTF now has a guest list that's a who's who of ha-ha, from Judd Apatow to Ben Stiller to Robin Williams. Of course, the podcast is funny. It's also filled with F-bombs. But it's much more than that. Maron is a keen interviewer and often seduces his very public guests to go to a very private place by revealing his own legion of anxieties and insecurities. It doesn't hurt that they're usually sitting in Maron's rather unintimidating garage/studio. The first WTF show I heard was a two-parter with comedian producer-writer Louis C.K. It's incredibly personal because the two had been very close but had fallen out over the years. But I was really amazed at how revealing their conversation was about show business, stuff that we could never get people to say here on The Business. So today we're going to put their conversation on The Business. Louis C.K. has had an amazing career in comedy. He's done a string of HBO comedy specials and a stand-up concert film. He's written for Conan, Letterman, and The Chris Rock Show. He had a short-lived but much-loved series on HBO called Lucky Louie, and now he's got a series on FX called Louie. We join the conversation after Maron asks about CK's first big break, getting a writing gig on the then-new Conan O'Brien Show.
Saturday Night Live threw out a huge amount of their cast. It was one of their biggest...
Was that when I went in? Was it 95?
Or summer of 93.
Right.
And everybody I knew got hired. Every single person. David Tell was a writer.
Yeah.
Jay Moore was a writer-performer. Sarah Silverman, writer-performer. Lark Keitlinger.
Yeah.
Jeanine Garofalo.
Yeah.
I mean, my entire generation of comics got hired in SNL. Everybody.
Yeah.
And I was at the same audition. I auditioned the same night. I was on first. They put me on first. And Jon Stewart was hosting.
Right.
And Louis Ferranda, who ran the club then, the SNL people hadn't shown up. So
right.
I said, I just want to start. Let's get going. And he told me to go on without them being there.
Yeah.
And I said, but they're not going to see me. So Jon Stewart was my friend, and he said, I'll do as long as I can.
Yeah.
And he did like 20 minutes to open, but then he kind of shrugged at me and said, I got to bring you up. And I went on, and the instant I went on, the SNL people came in. Saving grace was that David Spade was in the group, and
yeah.
He knew me. I didn't know him personally, but he liked my act, so he told him, sit down and watch this guy. And I saw him do it, and I had a great set. And then everybody else followed. And the next day, everybody found out who was hired. Everybody was hired, and I wasn't. And then I thought, this is it. I mean, I don't know if I can keep doing this. And I remember I called you.
Yeah.
I called you in the middle of the night to ask you about San Francisco and whether I should move there. And I was questioning the whole career.
And did I say anything helpful?
We talked till dawn.
Yeah.
And I think I unloaded on you that I didn't think I had any shot at anything anymore and that I was really remorseful. But it's like coming out of prison. How do you back out of a comedy career?
Yeah.
I was 25 years old, and I had been doing stand-up since I was 18.
Yeah.
So I had no way.
No skills.
Nothing. And so we talked about it. You told me about your life there, and I just thought, I'm not going to make it there either. And I hung up the phone intensely depressed.
Yeah.
And then my phone rang like 2 hours later. Like, I got 2 hours sleep, and it was this guy. Hi, my name is Robert Smigel. I don't know if you've heard about the Letterman show going away, and Conan is this guy. And I didn't know any idea who Conan was. And he said, Jim Downey saw you at Catch. Jim Downey was running SNL then. And he said that you were funny, so I wanted to know if you had any writing samples.
Did you?
I had it. Well, I had short films I had made.
You had, oh, the ones
that
with
I just
Shapiro
made on my own dime.
And Ice Cream.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, he hired me. Within a week, I was hired at Conan. They saved my life.
And I think it's important for people who are listening to realize that, you know, between you, Robert Smigel, Dino Stamatopoulos, and Conan,
yeah,
you guys redefined, you know, what late night sketch comedy looked like in the context of that type of show.
Yeah, it was a pretty different show, yeah.
Well, you were pushing the envelope because your comedy, being as absurd as it was, and his sensibility and Dino's sensibility, you know, brought this type of, you know, almost childlike inventiveness to sketch comedy again, which was completely unique.
I think that's true, yeah.
And that it set the tone for that show for the next 12 years.
Yep.
But the greatest moment of this type of style backfiring, which I thought was an important moment, was when Dana Carvey got the variety show.
Yeah.
And Smigel was the head writer, and he brought you guys in.
Yep.
And you wrote that sketch, that opening piece.
The nipples thing, yeah.
That really was like a thing where, like, it sort of resonates all the way through to Conan, you know, not, you know, functioning the way the network wanted to in the Tonight Show slot.
Right.
Was that, you know, here Dana Carvey had a primetime show, and he brought in you guys who were a late-night operation.
Yep.
And you guys struggled over that sketch. And what was it again?
It was just this weird idea that I had on the way to work one morning, that Bill Clinton had surgery so that he could breastfeed.
Right.
And then I thought then he would have nipples going down his belly like a dog.
And you had to work around Carvey, who was an impressionist.
Yeah.
That's who
I think
you
that's
were
why I
for.
Said Bill Clinton.
Right, yeah. Right, of course.
But I also did like the idea of Bill Clinton breastfeeding a baby.
Right.
Like on national TV to
right.
show that he was a nurturing
So it was a good-hearted idea, but
it
was an opening sketch for the first show, was it not?
Yeah, and it shouldn't have been. I mean, it was. I argued against it being the opening sketch because I thought it's going to kill us. But the network really wanted Dana to do an in-one. It was like just this thing where they wanted a thing where Dana, in a character, talks to a camera, and it's the only option we gave him that had that.
The only option you gave him was that Bill Clinton opens
exactly.
his shirt, he has dog nipples,
yeah,
like a
and there's milk spurting out of them onto live puppies and squirting them in the face, and kittens on his desk.
And what was the blowback from
really
that?
Really scared the shit out of people. It really bummed people out.
I know this is shocking to you, and I feel your revulsion. But do you know how many babies I can feed with this milk? Do you realize how much money can be saved in the school lunch programs? Let me show you how much. I will feed the world.
And I learned a lot from that whole experience. It was a terrible, terrible experience. I hated it. I hated being
What did you
show.
Learn?
I just learned that you can't force people to like something if it's not what they want. I mean, it's not... Why were we trying to make these people? We would get these letters that were heartbreaking. You know,
really?
That really hurt my feelings. Like people that are really like just were so upset by what we did.
But yeah. I mean, wasn't that part of the agenda? Was it to push the envelope?
Well, when we did the show, ABC had NYPD Blue on the air. Because we were right before NYPD Blue.
Right.
And so they said, we want you to get in trouble. We want you to make waves. That's what they told us.
The wrong group of guys to do that.
But then after we signed during the summer that we developed the show, ABC was sold to Disney. That's when that happened.
Right.
ABC was bought by Disney. And so we all of a sudden, everything changed.
Yeah.
They stopped saying you're on before NYPD Blue. They started saying you're on right after Tim Allen. That became the focus of the show.
Right.
And they put Dana on a huge two-page ad in TV Guide with his arm around Kermit the Frog.
Oh, my God.
A picture he never posed for.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he was furious.
Yeah.
And the expectation for the show was it's going to be very sweet. And Dana's a sweet guy. He's not a guy you think of as irreverent.
Well,
he's
when you were
really
trying to
guy.
Sell him on the breastfeeding thing, what was that like?
He loved it. I mean, Dana was a gamer. I loved him.
Yeah.
Dana's a great guy. And he's enormously talented. He's like Sid Caesar or something.
Right.
I thought the show had great potential because of what he could do and what he was willing to do.
Yeah.
He was willing to do anything.
Right.
You can see that Dana Carvey, Bill Clinton breastfeeding sketch on our website at kcrw.com/thebusiness. If you're just joining us, you're listening to The Business, and I'm Matt Holzman, sitting in for Kim Masters. For the past couple of years, comedian Marc Maron has been talking to the biggest names in funny for his podcast called WTF. Yes, it does stand for that. Today, we're listening to his interview with comedian, writer, producer Louis C.K. Here, he tells Maron how becoming a father changed his career.
When I had my daughter, her mother had her in front of me, everything changed. I just fell in love with this kid. I just felt she changed everything. And because you can't f*** around when you have kids.
Right.
You can't afford to go into a depression. You can't afford to go eat yourself into a stupor and lay on the floor. You can't do it. The kid needs to be taken care of. I suddenly had a reason to earn money. That was real.
And this whole thing is what really defined the next phase of your creativity.
Yeah. So instead of going like, I'll have an idea when I have it, and f***ing system, and the studios are holes.
Yeah.
And, you know, why isn't I getting the gigs? I couldn't do it anymore. I had to start going like, okay, what do you want to do? Make plans. Make actual plans.
Now, I don't want to, just rush over Lucky Louie, but I think that what happened there, and we don't have to go into the politics of it, but I remember you not dragging me, I was always happy to see what you made. No, I'm serious. You said, I want you to watch this pilot. You explained to me, what it was. You said, mm-hmm. Look, what we're doing is we're doing the Honeymooners. That's what we're doing. And the set is the Honeymooners set. It is stripped down. We're doing, straight out, 1950s, 1960s television where the action takes place in almost it was almost like in television like post-vaudeville where you're dealing with almost play sets.
Right.
And that was your idea, is that we're going to infuse a modern sensibility into a classic context. And that was the intellectual conceit of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think ultimately what happened was the conceit was lost. I think some people were like, why didn't they make better sets?
Yeah, that's what some people said. And right. I remember being on the phone with Chris Albrecht, who ran HBO at the time, and gave me the show. And he was laughing about reviews that said, the sets are so poorly constructed.
Right.
And he said, why would we let that happen unless it was on purpose?
Right.
Like, do they really think that I'm reading... This is Chris Albrecht.
Yeah.
Does this reviewer really think I'm reading this and going, oh, God, we really should have put more money? I mean, look at what we do. Look at The Sopranos heavy production they put in everything.
Yeah.
Why would we do that unless it was deliberate?
Right.
The reason I did it that way, I wasn't trying to go back to Honeymooners so much as I was trying to scale back what had happened to sitcoms that hadn't helped them. And it wasn't only the Honeymooners. It was also All in the Family. For me, the thing was... Guys like performers like Jackie Gleason and
Carol O'Connor.
Yeah, Carol O'Connor.
Yeah.
Were aware of their audience. And I love that kind of work. To me, that is a beauty in playing an audience like an instrument.
Here's a scene from Lucky Louie where Louis C.K. is talking to the girl who plays his young daughter.
Papa, can we play outside?
No.
Why?
Because it's 5 o'clock in the morning. It's too early.
Why?
The sun hasn't come up yet.
Why?
Because the sun comes up later.
Why?
Well, the earth goes around, and when it turns a certain amount, the sun shows on the horizon.
Why?
I don't know.
Why? Why don't you know, Papa?
Because I didn't pay attention in school, okay? I didn't listen in class.
Coming up after a short break, Louis C.K. talks about the demise of his HBO show and landing the deal of a lifetime for his FX series, Louie. You're listening to The Business from KCRW and KCRW.com. This is The Business, and I'm Matt Holzman, sitting in for Kim Masters. Today we're doing something a little different. We're airing somebody else's show business interview. In particular, a conversation between fellow comedians and old friends Marc Maron and Louis C.K. You may have read about Maron recently in the New York Times. He sat down with an impressive list of comedic performers and entertainment industry pros for his podcast called WTF. The conversations are funny and insightful and raw, but for the purposes of this show, they're filled with the kind of candor about the business you just won't find outside the offices of CAA. When we left off, Maron was talking about CK's much-beloved but short-lived HBO series, Lucky Louie.
Do you think at the time that you did Lucky Louie that you were stifled by your acting ability?
I wish I'd done what Gleason did. You hear these stories that he never came to rehearsals.
Yeah.
Every actor, every real TV actor really needs rehearsals in order to know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And everybody rehearsed without him. And then he would just come in and go, all right, what are we doing? And he'd know half his lines and he wouldn't know the blocking.
Yeah.
And they just learned how to work around that. I wish I'd done that because I have better instincts as a comedian than I do as an actor. And we rehearsed, we rewrote, so we did everything I didn't want to do. When we started doing that show, I said to Mike Royce, who was my partner, we're not going to have a writer's room full of writers who are perfecting the scripts and rewriting every little line and like pouring over it on a big screen where everybody chimes in.
Yeah.
We're not going to punch up everything and change out the punchlines every take.
Yeah.
But we did it, and it just eased towards that because we had a staff of writers and because that's how people know how to do it.
Right.
The thing that changed it, though, was Pamela, who played my wife. She was like a comedy team with me. That
right.
was a huge revelation for me, to get laughs with a partner.
Right.
I had never, never done that before. That was a massive thing.
Right. But what was
Lucky
the ultimate...
Louie was harder than this series I'm doing now. It's just a huge amount of work. And you
what
also
was
have
the ultimate
please...
demise of it?
Well, everyone thought it was a laugh track. Everyone thought we put in fake laughs, and some people were really turned off by that.
So it was lost on them.
Yes, they just thought it was fake laughs
right.
and shitty sets
right.
and bad acting. And we even had a thing like in Happy Days, Lucky Louie was taped before a live audience.
Right.
We said that before every show,
yeah,
and everyone would still say it's canned laughter. Anyway, that's why people didn't like it, I think. We got great ratings.
Yeah.
We got great ratings.
But now this is the miracle. This is the perfect storm is where we're at now. And
yep.
You've got a deal now that people are – that comics are now telling their managers. So
I want the Louis C.K.
Give me the
yeah.
Louis C.K.
yeah,
deal.
That's what everybody says, yeah.
So you aligned yourself with FX who basically said, like, here's some money. You said, look, don't pay me a salary. Just give me this money and I'll make these things.
Yeah.
And they trusted you enough. You had a big enough track record. You're a capable director. You're a capable comedy writer. You're a capable showrunner. You're a capable performer. And you're a stand-up. And they trusted you with that. You're like, it's like Orson Welles.
Yeah.
Just give the money was nothing, right? I mean, in,
very
not,
little.
Not in the sense that like it was obviously money, but in the context of what money they throw away.
Yes.
On bigger you
way
know,
more money. Yeah.
Right, and so you took this all on, and the amazing thing about what's happening now with this show, and you know, I watch it, and I love it, and I love you, you know, but yeah, but sometimes you know, my resentment gets in the way, but I do a joke on stage now. I actually say I don't know when my friend's success is going to seem like anything. But an attack on me. I don't, and I say, like, I don't know why Louis had to call his show F*** You, Marc Maron, but that's what comes up on my television. But the thing is what I know about you is, like, people are like, I don't, you know, it's confusing to them sometimes
because
there's not a singular narrative.
Right.
It's got a feeling, a raw feeling that people are like, I don't know how to react to the show.
Yeah.
But what I know is that this is Louis C.K. investing all his talents of everything he's done and all his life experiencing it, doing exactly what he wants to do.
Yeah, this has been a crazy dream, this thing. It's been amazing.
And it's successful.
Yeah, it's
they're
going to
do
well.
Doing
another season, yeah.
How many episodes?
13.
Now, how the f*** are you going to do that yourself?
Keep doing it? Well, I did it once. I mean, I learned from just doing it. In other words...
Because a guy in your position now, like, why wouldn't you bring in writers?
If I brought in a writing staff, it would change everything. The show wouldn't be good anymore. I mean, it wouldn't be what it is. So, I mean, I did it. I did one season. Now I know how I pulled it off the first time.
A system is a place. You out of necessity...
I have a company that we made. We had to do a huge amount of stuff that we never have to do again.
Right.
We had to find offices, build a crew. We had to find a good workflow. We had to do, you know, get permits and a relationship with the state of New York and the city of New York. All that we had to bang out a union contract, all this stuff. We had to do all those things, and that was an enormous amount of work because I'm the head of the show, and everything comes back to me, even the union contracts. So all that's done now. and I know how to do it. I mean, I edit the whole show. I write and edit the whole show on my MacBook Pro on a 13-inch. I didn't even use a 15-inch, because let alone a 17. I had, you know, everybody wants the Louis C.K. deal, but it's not gonna be so easy for everybody.
Well, no, because no one can. This is what I'm saying, is it's that same thing as you got a comic. It's like, let me do that. Who the f*** can do that?
Well,
I'm exhausted listening to your process.
A lot of it is because of technical knowledge.
No, you're right.
It's because I took the f***ing AV class in junior high school and learned how to fix
computer.
That's why I know how to do this stuff. Because when I was in high school, I got an internship at a local access cable TV station, and they had remote deck and camera setups.
Yeah.
And they had editing bays. Like, I became this techie kid. I was like this little nerdy kid who would fix the cameras.
Yeah.
So that's what always gave me the license to do this stuff.
Well, the amazing thing is that you do these things that are, you know, founded in your absurd vision and reveal your personal life. And then also, you know, sometimes you choose to do a narrative about bullies, which is very heartfelt. And the relationship with your kids and even with Pamela, you know, that what you're creating is a real human struggle and real deep comedy. And it's completely honest to your vision. And you can do whatever you want with it. And I think that people are really taking to it, and it's successful. And the people that get it and are willing to write it, I think you're changing the tone of how television can be made, and I'm very proud of you, and I'm excited for your success.
Thank you, man.
And it's great to see you.
Yeah, you too.
And I'm glad we had this talk.
Yeah, you know, it's when you know somebody for a long time, it's a very valuable thing.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
I mean, and we were best friends for a long time.
I know.
Long, long time.
I know.
It's worth noting that Marc Maron wasn't always so magnanimous. Having been close friends for years, C.K. and Maron lost touch, largely because of Maron's self-admitted jealousy of C.K.'s career. They talk a lot about their relationship in this podcast, which we had to cut down for time. But we wanted to play the last few minutes of their conversation because it really shows how hard it can be to maintain relationships in show business.
What I would say, as far as trying to stay friends with somebody that you have a hard time thinking about what they're doing against what you're doing,
yeah,
is focus on them needing a friend.
Yeah.
Everybody needs support. Yeah. Everybody does.
Yeah.
So you're letting me down. If you see me doing something and you have a hard time coming to terms with it because you're feeling about your own life, what's really happening is you're letting me down as a friend by being jealous.
Okay.
So think about the other person. I could have used you. I got divorced. I got a show canceled. You know, I had some tough times. I could have used a friend. I was struggling. I was having a hard time.
But
doing the Louis show was really hard. Trying to keep my family together was hard.
But the thing is that in the way our friendship always operated, it was not that I was kept up to date in the day-to-day things. It wasn't a day-to-day call that we had. But it seemed that most of the time, the thing that made our friendship so deep and so strong was that when we did talk, we made each other feel better.
No, it's true. But you shut me out. You shut me out because you were having a hard time.
Okay, and, well, I apologize again.
Well, I apologize to you because I did it to you probably out of resentment. Ignored your emails because you ignored my phone calls back when there was no email.
Can we get back on track or what?
Yeah, I think we can.
I love you, man. Let's just try to
be better
friends.
Okay.
You can find links to Marc Maron's fantastic WTF podcasts and iPhone app on iTunes and at WTFpodcast.com. Louis C.K.'s stand-up concert movie Hilarious is now on Comedy Central, and it'll be available on DVD this week. His TV series Louis returns to FX for a second season later this year. And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. To leave a comment about today's show, go to kcrw.com/thebusiness, where you can also stream and podcast the show and check out past episodes. You can also leave a post on our Facebook page, KCRW's The Business. And you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. The Business is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica. I'm Matt Holzman, sitting in for Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.